south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander, my thoughts ever stray.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you what it's really like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. I tell it just like it is, so let's get started. You know, at my last Expat Wisdom Seminar, I changed my look just a little bit. I tried to come off this time not looking too extremely under the radar. Though I guess if you're extremely under the radar, you'd probably stick out on that count, so that would be an oxymoron now, wouldn't it? So instead of being extremely low profile, what you should shoot for is just plain old blending in, that kind of low profile. Though as some of you guys have pointed out, it's almost impossible to get away with that completely because we all stick out like sore thumbs. I mean, we're gringos after all, right? For example, most of us can't change the fact that we're about a half a foot taller than the average person down here. So in that respect, we're going to stick out. So anyway, back to the point. In my last Expat Wisdom Seminar, I changed my look just a little bit. And I did that because, in my last couple of seminars, I heard some comments that I looked a bit rumpled, you know? And that's clean rumpled. And there's a difference, really. Which is actually a look a lot of us long-term expats cultivate down here in Latin America, because who needs to impress anyone, right? Sure, you can't hide the fact that you're a gringo, but when you're a rumpled gringo, and you're not showing off any flash, well, you're nobody's target then, right? Anyway, this time I thought, I'll try to look a little bit more professional and pick up a couple of new basic clothing items and look a little more pressed, you know? And I did that basically because one of my bilingual expat wisdom translator girls pulled me aside at one of our meetings and said, "Johnny, don't take this wrong, but maybe you should dress up like a guy who's actually supposed to be giving a seminar." Now, I'm not the kind of guy who caves into peer pressure very easily, but I always thought that short baggy pants with the ass crack showing was the style for seminar presenters these days. Wow, good thing she clued me in on that, huh? Just kidding, but bottom line, I did go out and get some new threads. And you know, right away I got a couple of comments. One of the ladies at the seminar, she said to me, "Johnny, that's a very cool jacket you're wearing." And she wasn't trying to get me to buy dinner either. She really meant it, I could tell. And I gave her the usual response and said, "What? This old thing?" And then I laughed and said, "You know, I just bought this thing maybe about 4 or 5 days ago." And you know what? For a minute, I was feeling a little guilty pleasure out of it. Because it was a real name brand and I never buy designer labels. Not if I can help it, because again, that's not keeping a low profile, right? And the guilty pleasure was I was getting complimented on a jacket I paid like $11 for, from a name brand designer, no less. And I felt really excellent about that for about 9 seconds, which is, I guess, why that name brand stuff sells, for that 9 seconds of euphoria, you know? Now, I must say the jacket is kind of cool. With a lot of zippers and buttons and doodads that people dig these days, you know? So, absolutely, in the end, it was $11 well spent. Knowing that surely this thing had cost $50 or $60 up in the States, who knows? Anyway, I felt really good for a couple days wearing this thing, until one day, when I was getting my shoes shined at the airport for like 40 or 50 cents, I noticed, to my shock, surprise, and eventual disappointment, that the shoe shine guy had the exact same jacket on. So much for my 9 seconds of euphoria. Now, I bring this up specifically because I want to talk about people who blog about Latin America and try to come off as authorities on the subject, but really give out incorrect, if not bad, information. But they give misinformation out with authority because they have nice websites. Some of them, anyway. Basically, because they've only been down here a few weeks or months, and they've got very incomplete information since they prefer to mix with other gringos and upper-middle-class Latins, never really mingling with the other 95% of Latin society. And that, believe me, is where the action is. And still, they blog away like they're experts. Maybe it's that they just crave an audience and don't know any better. And since these tenderfoot expats generally have very bad Spanish, they tend to hang out with those bilingual gringo wannabes who don't like mixing with the common people themselves, which even further limits your exposure as to how society works here. And that's a big mistake because you'll never find out what's happening at the street level. And it usually turns out that the most these tenderfoot expats get to actually mix with the common people is when they get waited on at a restaurant, because the gringos and the bilingual people they end up hanging out with don't like mingling with the middle and lower classes, except when they need a maid, some yard work done, or a toilet fixed. Now, let's dissect this phenomena a bit more. I mentioned in the previous show that there's a lot of people who blog about their travels through Latin America. I mean, if you check the web, you can find hundreds, if not thousands, of these guys out there. You know, everybody wants to tell you about their experiences, right? Everybody thinks what they're doing, exploring, or discovering is of huge interest to the rest of the world. I mean, that's what blogging's all about, right? But the problem, you see, is a lot of these IT guys who were successful in IT or have internet businesses, guys who build nice, beautiful websites, well, they think their blogging skills are up to their IT skills, and they're not. And of course, they'll never tell you that, and I'm sure they don't realize it themselves. But they can confuse and mislead a lot of wannabes that might be reading their blog sites, because they do come off sounding like big authorities on some Latin American subject or other. Even though, like I said, the majority of these guys have only been down here with boots on the ground for a few weeks to a few months. Then they're back up in the States again, blogging away as if they were still down here. But they're not going to tell you that either. If they did, their credibility would be shot now, wouldn't it? Then you just wouldn't bite when they tried to sell you something on their website, which is the usual end game, right? Anyway, I gotta say I do admire some of the bloggers out there who tell their travel stories with some humor and some modesty. They're not trying to come off as the voice of authority on anything. They're just giving you an idea of their own day-to-day life, which can be pretty amusing and informative, which is always a good mix. For example, this guy Tom, who came to my expat wisdom seminar and ended up staying down here. Actually, he never left. And along the way, through his travels in Central America, because that's where he is right now, he started writing a blog called something like Stumbling Through Paradise. You know, a funny tongue-in-cheek take on his adventures through Latin America. And even though he doesn't know the language and has never been down here before, he's willing to give just about everything and anything a go, including visiting places way off the tourist trail. He's not afraid one bit to mingle and hang with the common people, even though, like I said, his Spanish sucks. And being that he's all alone now on his voyage, he's made all kinds of strange and wonderful friends along the way. Anyway, he's not trying to tell anybody what they should or shouldn't do, nor is he trying to come off as some kind of expert. That's why he calls his blog Stumbling Into Paradise. Every day for him is a new adventure. Sometimes he hits the jackpot and some days he falls flat in his face. You know, stumbling into paradise, right? Now, blogs like his are the ones to read. It's different, fun, and you can even learn something from it. Then you have these other kind of bloggers who are just the opposite. They've been down here only a couple of months or a couple of weeks, and to satisfy their low self-esteem or big egos or craving for an audience or whatever, they try to come off as gurus or experts in all things Latin American. And some of these guys are borderline frauds. They use Latin American addresses while blogging from the States, obviously to appear as if they're actually down here. Go figure. Now, of course, anybody can set up a website and blog. No crime against that, and no one's forcing you to go there and read it either. But just to show you how much bad, if not false, information is out there about Latin America, I'm going to read an example or two for you. And I can't figure out if it's coming from people who've got a self-esteem problem, they need an audience, or they just have know-it-all personalities. Who knows, but they're out there blogging away. So what's that got to do with you, me, and the expat files? Well, for expat wannabes, the problem is how to separate the wheat from the chaff. Because obviously, if you're interested in stuff like this, you're trying to make plans to possibly escape and come down here. And since we're dealing with the internet, finding good information is not all that easy. Now, listen to this. I'm looking at a blog from one of these guys right now, and he says, and I'll paraphrase here, many things are bargains in Latin America. However, don't make the mistake of thinking that everything is a bargain, because many things are not. They're actually significantly more expensive than in the U.S. and the rest of the world. For example, name brand clothing. He says, it's a strange irony, but in countries that produce a lot of the clothing we wear in the U.S., like Guatemala, Salvador, Honduras, etc., those quality and name brand designer clothes are not cheap. In fact, they're downright expensive here, even by North American standards. Well, you know what? If you read that, you're going to think, hey, you know, I'm not going to buy any real name brand stuff in Latin America. God, I'm glad I found that out before I go down. Well, guess what? I'm here to tell you the complete opposite is true. Now, I just told you that little story about my jacket, right? That was my lead-in to this segment and how I got started on this in the first place, if you haven't figured that out already. Anyway, let me tell you the story about name brand clothing here in Latin America and how you can get it for half, a third, or even a quarter of what you'd pay up in the first world. So how does this guy get off saying what he just said? Well, that's because if you haven't been down here for an extended period of time, the only places you're going to shop for clothes are in shopping malls. And shopping malls down here in Latin America have all the designer clothing stores like Diesel and Guess and all that. And if you buy name brands at stores like that, you're going to pay first world or higher prices. However, in every city in Latin America, there is a neighborhood business district, or two or three, with dozens and dozens of little storefront clothing outlets. Though usually located in middle and lower middle class, scruffy neighborhoods. Not dangerous neighborhoods, but scruffy. Places the average gringos and tenderfoot expats never go. Nor do upper middle class Latins or children of the entitled rich ever frequent those places either. Many of those outlets are mom and pop shops, where you can buy designer labels as well as knockoffs, pirated stuff, and the same low-end clothing that you see in Sears and Monkey Wards and any number of no-name clothing stores that you see up in the first world, too. But you know, if you haven't been down here a while and haven't been mixing with the common people, you're not going to know about those places. Because if the only Latins you come into contact with are professionals like doctors, lawyers, and accountants, and bilingual translators who go to the expensive private schools, well, they don't shop in those places. It's a class and neighborhood thing, and it's beneath them, you know? But an average girl, a girl comes from a family whose father makes about $300 to $500 a month, that's where she shops all the time. That's why you often do see girls at bus stops wearing the latest styles and brand names like Guess, Jordache, Benetton, Diesel, and Gloria Vanderbilt jeans, as well as all the other designer labels you can think of. But just a minute, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, those are probably fakes. Pirated jeans, right? Then of course they're going to be half again or a quarter as cheap as the real thing, which would confirm what that guy said in his blog, right? Well, let me tell you a little story. Being that I've been down here a long, long time, I personally know textile factory owners and people who have factories that make jeans and blouses and belts and skirts for Tommy, Guess, Gloria Vanderbilt, and any other designer brand name you've seen up in the first world. And if you come down to my Expat Wisdom seminar sometime, I'll introduce you to these guys because they're on my business tour. Anyway, well, it just so happens that one of my expat gringo friends was up till very recently the owner of the biggest silkscreen textile factory in all of Central America. Silkscreening, of course, for designer labels all over the world. And this is what he has to say about knockoffs and pirating down here versus buying original designer clothes. And obviously, you can get them both down here. Anyway, as he explained to me and the people at my Expat Wisdom seminar, he says, for example, when they get an order for 20,000 shirts from Gloria Vanderbilt, or Armani, or Abercrombie & Fitch, Ralph Lauren, or Hugo Boss, or whatever, they always make a clothing run of 5 or 10% more. And he says, if you're a really good, detailed operation, you really only need to run maybe 1% more. Because, like he said, at his shop, that's about all the rejects you're going to get. So, for example, if you run 20,000, like he said, and you've got 10% overrun, that's 2,000 extra shirts you've produced with only 200 shirts that are actually rejects. And the rest of that overrun are absolutely fine, which is that 1% he was talking about at his factory. So what happens to that other 1,800 shirts? You think they just burn them or toss them in a dumpster? Well, no. He says they go to these little small outlets, these tiny little places that I was talking about, these small mom-and-pop clothing shops, some of them owned by Latins, some of them Koreans and Middle Easterners too. They get their hands on those extra runoffs. But the deal is, like my friend says, you can only sell them within the country. You can't ship them for export anywhere. Because that's part of the deal they have with these big brand-name outfits from up in the garment district in New York. So there you have it. You can go to the Tommy Hilfiger store and buy some real designer Tommy jeans for $110, probably paying more than you'd pay up in the States for the same thing. Or you can shop where the average Latin girl shops, in one of those concentrated little clothing districts that green gringos and tenderfoot expats don't even know about. And sure, it's true. When you go into one of those stores, you might not find the Tommy jeans of your liking. You might not find Tommy jeans at all. You're going to find what's ever being produced and run off at the moment in some of these big factories. And you know, if you jumped on a plane right now and came down here to Central America and you met up with me, I could take you by the hand and in 20 to 25 minutes get you to one of these little concentrated clothing shop areas, and you could shop designer labels to your heart's content for half to a quarter of what you'd pay for the very same thing up in the first world. So that dispels your so-called expert blogger myth number one, but that's not all. The same guy goes on to blog about buying electronic products down here. He says, and I'm paraphrasing again, computers, mobile phones, digital camera, video gear, and many garden variety adapters and cables are all significantly more expensive than in North America. And you know what? He's completely right about that if you're a tenderfoot, clueless shopper. But all of us expats who've been down here a long time know it's completely different. We know how and where to shop. Again, because green gringos and tenderfoot expats always seem to shop for that stuff at malls and big shopping centers. And some of those mall stores are first world franchises, so you're going to pay first world prices. Like in Walmart, Sears, Ace Hardware, Costco, and Radio Shack. Duh. Or company stores like the iPhone store or Sony or LG stores, where you are going to pay first world prices too. However, if you look in the big city Latin papers these days, and in the Sunday supplements, you'll find electronic things like TVs and phones and boomboxes and video games and stuff, and PC computers, at first world prices too, or pretty damn close. And by the way, you don't see deals on Apple products. Down here, nobody gets a deal on Apple. Not yet, anyway, but it'll come. After all, they make this stuff in China, right? But aside from Apple and high-end audio stuff like Bose and Blaupunkt, stores are always running sales. And here's the biggest joke. The same blogger guy says, garden variety adapters and cables are all significantly more expensive than in North America. Which is completely true if you buy that stuff at shopping mall stores. But again, there's a flip side to the story. I can take you to sections of town in any medium to big city where there's a conglomeration of little tiny hole-in-the-wall electronic supply stores. And the doors might be tiny, but they open up into giant warehouses, what they call bodegas here, just filled with every known plug, adapter, cord, and cable, as well as every electronic part you can think of. In fact, I told you that story a couple of segments ago about how I had my plasma screen television repaired for a third, or was it a quarter, of what they would have charged me at the regular service center, which in that case was the Costco service center. How do you think that little repair guy that I took it to was able to charge me only a quarter or a third of the authorized service center price? Well, that's because he knows he can go down to a certain section of his town and search out his parts at a cheap electronic supply store that he knows has everything. And, you know, being an engineer myself in a former life, I've repaired a lot of electrical appliances in my day, and I know just the part of town to go when I have to buy any kind of supplies myself. In fact, I've bought lots of adapters and cables for computers, audio, you name it, and I've bought it down here. Cheap. I mean, ridiculously cheap. In fact, right now, if you jumped on a plane and met me down here, in practically any Latin American city at all, you name it, I could lead you by the hand and show you where to buy any electronic cable or adapter known to man. And guess what? Last time I checked out one of these places, about 5 or 6 months ago, when I needed a video extension cable for an overhead projector, I think I paid about $4 for an 8-footer and about $2.50 for a 12-foot USB extension cable. In fact, the finished cable was so ridiculously cheap, I couldn't buy the raw materials cheaper and do it myself. And that's what I used to do 30 years ago back in the States. I wouldn't pay $10 for a cable, I'd spend $3 and get the parts and make it myself because, well, that's what engineers and techies do when they want to save a few bucks. But down here, again, if you know where to look, things are so damn cheap, you'd be a fool to solder up a cable yourself, like I used to do when I was back up in the States. Just like you'd be nuts to clean your own house down here when you can get them made for $10 or $15 a day. But you see, if you're a green gringo or a tenderfoot expat, you're just going to stumble around Latin America and go to places that other gringos go to or places that are recommended by your upscale private school Latin friends who think it's beneath them to shop at some of the places that I just pointed out. So anyway, right about now, our blogger guy is batting with 2 strikes on him. So now we come to the final point this blogger guy blathers about. He states, vitamins, food supplements, and specialty foods are expensive in Latin America. He says, unless it's a common item in everyday use, you'll pay a small fortune for it. Now, I admit he's right about that. If you want a certain brand of CoQ10 or carnosine or Gary Null's green stuff or anything that's a specialty item, there's only two ways to get it. You got to have someone bring it down for you, or you order it through Amazon or one of those companies and it'll come FedEx or whatever, and you will pay a third to a half more than what you'd pay up in the first world for it. But shouldn't that be obvious? If you were in China, Indonesia, Malaysia, or Europe, you'd run into the same dilemma. If you want a certain brand of cold-pressed flax oil, well, you're going to have to order it from the States. There's no demand for that down here. And you don't want to go to GNC. They're all over the place down here. But they're an extreme ripoff, way too expensive, and their products, well, who knows about the quality. But I will say that every little neighborhood, it seems, has a business district with at least a couple of nice little organic, natural health food stores or kiosks, and they carry dozens, if not hundreds, of herbs and spices and medicines and treatments and stuff, a lot of which you've probably never even heard of. I know I haven't. But just remember, down here where I am right now, in Central America, this is formerly the land of the Aztecs and the Mayans, and there are millions of indigenous people still living down here, and they've got their own natural remedies for practically anything you can think of. So that, combined with modern Western medicine and alternative medicine, which is down here in a pretty big way, too, that, combined with organic health foods and supplements that we know about, there's a mix of all that stuff down here. You just have to know where to find it. But you're not going to find any of that stuff except a GNC store in upscale shopping malls where most green gringos and tenderfoot expats hang out when they first get down here. But I'll tell you what, if you go to any one of the low-end shopping malls, and you'll find a lot of small strip malls like that in most any middle-class residential area. Again, totally off the gringo radar. Anyway, if you go to one of those little malls, there'll always be a little natural health food counter or kiosk. But you're not going to get your favorite hawthorn extract or desiccated whey protein at one of these places. But chances are, if you tell the clerk what you're looking for, they'll have some kind of natural product available that'll do just about the same thing. And generally, because these natural products are grown around the area, they'll be very cheap compared to anything you can get up in the first world. And usually the packaging will be kind of rudimentary too. Sometimes it looks like someone grew the herb or spice in their garden and packaged it up on their kitchen table, which just might be the case. And here's another tip for you if you're looking for natural remedies. Check out the big open market in the city or town that you're in. There, you'll always be able to spot a couple of kiosks loaded with natural herbs and supplements and stuff. Then you can check out anything you might need or want to try before you go spending money on Amazon and having the stuff shipped down here or waiting for someone to bring it down for you from the States. And you know, the people behind the counter in those places might look like your average housewife or checkout clerk, but believe me, they know everything there is to know about natural herbs and spices grown in the region. So tell them what you need or what your problem is, and you just might discover a local natural product that you didn't even know existed that can really help. But again, that conversation is going to take place in Spanish, I can guarantee that. Now, I do have expat friends who occasionally make a jaunt back to the first world for whatever reason. For one, to make the obligatory trip back to the relatives they've escaped from. And by the way, that's what expat Eddie calls a guilt trip. Now, some expats go back for weddings or funerals, or just because they want a free body cavity search. I haven't had one of those yet. Anyway, I get dozens of offers a year from expats. No, not for a free body cavity search. They're offering to bring me back something I might need from back up in the States. And on occasion, I do take them up on it. And specifically, every year or two, I have someone bring down a slew of vitamins for me. Mostly because I've refused to buy similar ones at GNC for 4 or 5 times the price. But suddenly, if that route was cut off to me completely and I couldn't get that stuff anymore or anything from the first world, you know what? I wouldn't suffer one bit. It's only because I'm a bit lazy that I haven't searched out more of the equivalents down here. Though I have, by hook and crook, stumbled on certain vitamins and supplements down here that are even better than the stuff that you can get in the States. But I still depend on some certain vitamins and supplements from the States. But I'm working on changing that shortly. Because, in fact, I don't want to depend on the first world for anything, really. So anyway, what's our scorecard like with this know-it-all blogger guy? Well, we'll give him that vitamin thing. That's one in his favor. But he's struck out completely on the brand name clothing thing. And on that electronics stuff, he also scores a bust. He was wrong 2 out of 3 times. That's a 33%, which is an F- in anyone's book. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I have to say I was just like him in the first couple of years I came down. I hung around with gringos and expats and bilingual people, Latins from the snooty higher classes. But I got over it and learned my lesson, but that took about 5 years or so. And luckily, 18 or 20 years ago, there was barely an internet, so I couldn't blog and make a fool of myself. But now I'm on the radio making a fool of myself. So, in the immortal words of Elvis, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And that's why if you go to my website, expatwisdom.com, there's a consultation link on that page. And believe me, a lot of expat wannabes clicked on that link and scheduled consultation appointments with me well before they ever came down. And what they usually do is give me a list of 5 or 10 questions concerning their particular situation, and everyone's seems to be completely different. Like I said, I'm not the smartest expat in the world by any means. I made a ton of mistakes, especially in my first couple of years here. After all, one of my first moves was to Costa Rica, you know? But you know, in the end, moving there wasn't really a huge mistake after all. It turned out for the best because I learned all those hard social and business lessons that all expats face when they're trying to live on the tourist trail. And the fact is, once you've got a home and invested money in a place on the tourist trail, it's very difficult to get out. And what discourages a lot of expats who find out just how hard it is to make a go of it on the tourist trail with all that gringo competition, when things do go south, it can leave such a bad taste in your mouth, you just throw in the towel, take a loss, and head back to Cleveland or Chicago. And in the case of Costa Rica, that's happened to more than half of the expats I've met down there. And a good percentage of the ones that are still there want to get out, but they can't. But a small percentage of us lucky expats stumble off the tourist trail. Then we discover that gringo advantage. That's when that cliche of living in paradise on the cheap becomes a reality. So I might not be the expert expat, but as Expat Eddie says, there are crappier shows out there. The price is right and you get what you pay for. Now, before I close out today's show, I'd like to remind you that me and the gang at Expat Wisdom are thinking about putting together some one-day fast-track seminars specifically designed to jumpstart your prospective move to becoming an expat down here in Latin America. Give you a solid game plan. So if you're interested in attending a short one-day seminar, just go to expatwisdom.com and sign up for the info or email me at seminars@expatwisdom.com. Be sure to tell me where you live. Not your exact address, of course, but tell me what city you live in or the city that's closest to you. And that includes all you guys who are sick of living in Europe, too. So give me a heads up, and if there are enough people interested, there's a chance that some Expat Wisdom folks will be visiting a city near you.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America, coming to you each week from somewhere south of the border. And don't forget, you can email me on anything at all about Latin America, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture. He knows.